This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. Hello and welcome to our Market Talk Asia special. In this episode, we'll be focusing on the global macroeconomic topics affecting Asia investors. But we hope all of today's talking points, namely implications of further rate tightening from the US Federal Reserve, clean energy in Europe, and the most recent fallout from the UK's latest mini budget, will be of interest to all of our listeners. And as usual for a Market Talk Asia special, I'm joined by two experts, Ben Bennett, Head of Investment Strategy and Research in Hong Kong, and Maria Simpraga, Infrastructure Strategist here in the UK. Ben, Maria, welcome to you both.
Hi, Francis.
Hi, Ben. Let's just start with you, because I don't know whether it's made headline news all the way over in Asia, but media, TV is full of implications of that budget fallout from our new chancellor. The pound didn't like it, equities didn't like it, and nor did gilts. What's going on, Ben?
It's making headlines globally, the UK. And it's not just because it's important for the UK. I think it's telling you what's going on more systematically across the globe. So if you think about where we've been over the last two or three decades, it's been a world of low inflation, low interest rates. We've had globalization, China joining the World Trade Organization. We've had an aging population. We've had technology adoption, all these things keeping inflation low. That's allowed central banks to keep interest rates low. And it's allowed everyone to borrow money at low interest rates and buy a house or put that borrowing into financial products. And then what's happened over the last couple of years, we've been talking about it through all these market talks, haven't we? We had the COVID epidemic, which has led to supply issues, and that's led to a higher inflation. We've had energy crisis, partly caused by the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And then we've had governments during COVID and then the UK, bringing it back to the UK, deciding to spend lots of money, just print lots of money. And that's in a world where central banks are no longer able to keep interest rates low. They're no longer able to keep buying these government bonds doing QE. In fact, they're doing the opposite. They're having to hike interest rates to try and keep inflation under control. The Bank of England is going to be selling UK government bonds very soon. And governments are trying to print money and hand out money to the population, these fiscal giveaways at that moment. And all of a sudden, there's a big issue. The key is that the US government, the US economy is doing pretty well right now. And that's meaning that the US central bank is hiking interest rates, and that seems to be sucking everything out of every other economy. And the UK is really in the crosshairs right now. So we've seen massive movements in UK government bonds, in the pound. Basically, if you want to try and attract foreign investment to support these handouts that the UK government has announced, you're going to have to do it at cheaper and cheaper prices. That means you've got to have higher yields or the pound's got to fall in value. And that's certainly been the case.
And we are, of course, in the UK, reliant on what we call the comfort of strangers, aren't we, with funding those gilts. Just on that point, though, Ben, are you saying it's a storm in a British teacup then, or is it something decidedly more global?
It's global. So over, like I said, the last 20 years, there's been lots of examples of countries that have probably borrowed too much, companies that have borrowed too much, people that have borrowed too much. And when you increase interest rates, because of inflation, when you increase interest rates and central banks now have to keep the pressure on to try and get inflation under control, make all sorts of things come under pressure. At the minute, it's the UK, and we're seeing that happen in various different ways. The housing market in the UK could come under pressure. We now think over the next 18 to 24 months that we could see a 15% fall in the UK housing prices. It's also happening in pension investors in the UK here who have hedged themselves using interest rates, and with interest rates going up, they're now coming under pressure to increase collateral, to increase cash. That's a UK thing, but there will be other examples globally. Often it's emerging markets that come under pressure because they're the ones that have often borrowed too much over the previous years and maybe haven't increased interest rates too much. This time around, emerging markets might not be in such a bad position, strangely enough, but I'm sure there'll be other examples of parts of the financial instruments of countries that will come under pressure in the next few months because the US Federal Reserve is tightening funding conditions.
All right, well, let's turn to the US Federal Reserve now, because as a result of that tightening, dollar strength, it's sucking the life out of all liquid conditions. Is that, that's probably not a good analogy, but kind of know where I'm coming from.
Yeah, no, I think it is good. So yeah, let's just take some market moves and try and put it in context. So this is up to the 27th of September's close. So that's, as we're recording, that'll be yesterday's close. And I'm just looking at the third quarter. So from the end of June this year, and I'm taking data from ICON. So 10-year Treasury yields over that period are up 0.99%, so let's say 1%. So in that 3 months, yields have gone up by 1%, as the US Federal Reserve is having to accelerate its tightening. The market is reacting to that. That has been entirely driven by real interest rates. It's not driven by inflation expectations. It's real interest rates. All of that move is real interest rates. That's because the Federal Reserve is doing this. The DXY, which is the dollar index, it's mostly linked to the euro, bit of the yen, bit of sterling. That's up 9% as well over that period. So those two things, it costs you more to borrow in dollars, and the dollar has gone up. So if you borrow dollars, you're in deep trouble. That's leading to all sorts of other asset classes come under pressure. Equities actually have been more impacted this time around than credit. Credit felt the worst of it in the first half of the year, but so far in this third quarter, investment grade spreads are pretty flat. High yield and emerging market spreads are actually a little bit lower. Of course, yields are still up because they take on the underlying government bond yield as well. But at least the extra spread for credit hasn't gone up so much. But again, that's just because they had such a bad first half of the year. But equity, so the S&P 500, again, over that time is down 3.6%. So that's a pretty bad performance. And it does feel as though it's been going down over the last few days, and it's in a pretty weak position right now. Just thinking about Asia, it's been very bad over the last 3 months in certain markets. So the Hang Seng is down 18%, 18% over that period of time. And that's to do with, you know, the zero COVID policy, continuing pressure coming on the property market here in China. So, you know, parts of the world have done worse. But like I said, credit, parts of the world have done a little bit better. So it's not universally bad, but it's definitely pressure on.
You know, tightening, monetary tightening and fiscal easing aside, which have been the big talking points. Of course, another big talking point, if I can bring you in here, Maria, has been an emphasis on this huge volatility we've seen in energy markets. Again, putting a question about, you know, spotlight on energy security. I mean, as investors, where are we in thinking about clean energy? The energy transition sort of feels as though it's slightly being pushed to the sidelines, but of course it shouldn't be. What's your take on it all?
We've seen energy markets in Europe sort of calming down a bit over the last month or so from what are probably historic highs. But gas prices are still several fold higher versus historical averages. And because of the way the energy markets work, power prices also remain quite high versus historic comparables. And so while in the short term, so the absolute priority this winter is ensuring there is enough gas in Europe to heat people's homes and to keep the economy going, beyond that, it is really clear that the key to true long-term energy security is increased renewable deployment in the power sector, and then moving away from gas in transport and heating, for example. And that can be achieved through various means, from increased electrification, so relying on heat pumps instead of gas in homes, to some of the potentially more innovative ways of achieving it, such as using more hydrogen in certain industrial processes, certainly. While there may be an increase in emissions and fossil fuel consumptions in the near term, and you would have seen the headlines about Germany burning more coal and things like that, in the long run, the writing really is on the wall for fossil fuel use in Europe. And the current situation has just served to highlight the fact that renewable deployment and the energy security go hand in hand.
Are governments doing enough, though, to support the renewable energy pricing. I mean, Ursula von der Leyen has just slapped a windfall tax on renewable energy companies. What should investors make of that?
What the EU is doing does amount to a windfall tax. It's actually tinkering with the way the power markets work to make non-gas power generators give back some of the extraordinary profits which they've earned due to the huge spikes in power prices. So it's sort of power market reform that has the effects of a windfall tax. And this was something that I think most market participants had seen coming. So it was clear that the spikes in the wholesale commodity markets over the last year were going to lead to some very undesirable social outcomes. It was getting to a point where people were going to struggle to pay their energy bills, decide between food and heating. And it was clear that the governments were likely to step in and to try to put the whole energy industry on the sound footing again. So I don't think it came as a huge shock to the clean energy industry. And again, going back to the windfall taxes, it is important to note that these types of profits, which we've seen over the last year or so, were not in most investors' base cases. So when making the investment decision, the majority of investors were expecting and were happy with much lower power prices and project revenues. And so I'd argue that having some clarity on what the new rules will be and what the new power pricing framework will be is therefore a good thing. It will remove the overhang of regulatory uncertainty from project planning and financing and help new projects come forward.
Okay, so we're looking at working for a long-term energy price rather than short-term fluctuations is what you're saying.
Exactly. In the short term, you know, there will be reconfiguration of thinking and of the sort of a market framework, but in the long term, the kind of the direction of travel is still the same. So we're still and this has come through in the relatively recent publications from the EU on their Repower EU framework, which is sort of a 200 billion euro program to ramp up renewable deployment and wean the union off of Russian fossil fuels. So that just sort of reiterates that the thinking that renewable deployment is really what's going to help us achieve energy security, true energy security in the longer term.
Okay, and so just winding it back a bit, I mean, obviously, inflation was partly stoked, wasn't it, by rising energy prices, global supply chains post-COVID, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just thinking, Ben, and I was just looking at the price of copper and steel and oil this morning, all telling me, I think, that global growth is going to really slow down very sharply. Therefore, I'm thinking, well, actually, does that mean inflation has peaked now? Why is it a problem anymore?
That's right. We've seen, oil, just taking Brent oil as an example, again, in the third quarter up until the 27th of September, it's down about 25%, I think it is. So, it's been quite a large move down. That's, again, off quite a high base. So oil, energy prices, everything, commodity prices were high at the beginning of the year. Driven higher partly again by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but also supply issues. Definitely coming down over the last couple of months because of demand uncertainty due to future recessions. That's absolutely right. So that is taking some pressure off headline inflation. It's actually helping Americans again very nicely, thank you, because they spend a lot of money at the petrol pump. Mm-hmm. But that's actually leading to the US Federal Reserve, because the US consumer is doing quite well, that they're going to have to probably tighten a bit more than they thought they were going to do, which is impacting global conditions, as I said earlier. But also, it's not just about headline inflation anymore, it's core inflation. It is to do with the cost of housing, wage inflation. The Federal Reserve and every other central bank globally needs to see the labor market soften, and that's sort of a euphemistic way of saying we need to see unemployment go up. We need to see people lose their jobs, unfortunately, is that the minute where people have got an easy time getting a job, asking for higher wages. We're seeing this wage price spiral getting going. Whatever happens to the price of oil, price of copper, this is now set in stone. That's the concern of the central banks. Central banks have got to try and get that under control by hiking rates and causing a downturn, causing unemployment to go up.
So inflation is embedded in the system. Maria, then, in terms of the renewable energy space, given what Ben's just said, and investors will presumably be still looking to hedge, what options are available to them in your area?
There are different options for inflation hedging when investing in European renewables. Projects come with different revenue streams with different fundamentals. For example, on one end, in some markets, you may have a wind or solar project which has a 15-year fixed price inflation-linked offtake agreement, which is essentially government-backed. So as an investor, you have someone buying the power you're producing, well, your project is producing at a fixed price for 10 or 15 years. It's inflation-linked. There's a kind of a government underwrite at the bottom of all of it, and so that's one type of projects which offer quite a strong inflation protection. The flip side is that these projects, and probably doesn't come as a surprise, are in high demand by investors. So what we've seen, especially over the last and most part of the last decade, is the returns really compressing, so that the returns you can get from these projects are comparatively lower. There are other projects which are high yielding, so they will sell parts of their or even in some cases entirety of their output in the power market, receiving wholesale power prices, which of course are very high at the moment, and that also historically wholesale power prices have had a decent correlation to inflation. So these projects also may act as an inflation hedge, but it's really important to understand the risks around power price volatility and the ability to forecast commodity prices in the long term is something that's, I think, been quite difficult for most types of projects we see. And of course, this is also the area where the regulatory intervention risk is the highest. So then, of course, you have the middle, sort of middle ground, which is projects which have large commercial customers, and they sign contracts with those customers for sort of 5 or 10 years. And usually there is a fixed price which may or may not come with inflation indexing. The correlation to inflation may be a bit lower there, but they're kind of in the middle ground in terms of the kind of returns you may see. So there are several ways to hedge, but there's no silver bullet. So different types of renewable projects will offer investors the ability to sort of tailor the inflation exposure to their own situation, their own preferences and beliefs.
That's a good balanced view, isn't it? And I mean, as I understand it, and my knowledge is very limited, it is a very volatile market. So investors will have to navigate carefully, I think, is the takeaway, isn't it? This is a Market Talk Asia special. We haven't talked much about Asia, Ben. Talking about lower currencies, I saw the renminbi versus the dollar is at a historic low. What's going on there? Let's talk about what's happening in your world a bit.
Yeah, so every currency is weak against the dollar at the minute because the Federal Reserve is hiking interest rates and money is flowing into the US because it's attractive and you can get those nice dollars at very high interest rates. And China is suffering from that as well. As you say, they just crossed over the big figure 7. And you know, it seems to be getting a little bit worse. But actually, China compared to other countries is not the currency is not as weak as, certainly not as weak as sterling, and not as weak as the euro, not as weak as the yen. So it's just the dollar strength, I would say. China's got a lot of levers to pull in order to try and slow down that weakness. Also, it's got quite a tight grip on capital controls. So I wouldn't I wouldn't worry too much about China losing control of the currency. The things that we're looking out for China really is around the Party Congress, which is coming up on the 16th of October. President Xi Jinping should be elected for a third term and could outline some big picture strategies, although we might have to wait until the two sessions at the beginning of sort of March next year to get some more details. He might say some things about energy policy. I mean, that's going to be very interesting with the sorts of things that Maria's talking about. But for the whole world and, well, for the region, but everyone really, it's going to be whether or not they decide to do anything about the zero COVID policy, whether they want to use that as a forum to open up. Most people believe the consensus opinion is that it's too early. We've got winter around the corner. We're going to have Chinese New Year early next year when everyone moves around and meets people. Do you want to risk letting what is still a pretty bad disease into a population where the vaccination rate for the elderly is still too low? I think it's probably too early. Let's hope that they accelerate the vaccinations. Let's hope that there's better treatments put in place and that they can open up maybe in March after the two sessions. That would be my best case scenario. The risk is that they continue to be constrained into next year. We need China to open up globally, for the supply chains to improve more, for inflation pressure to reduce, to allow the Fed to stop their rate hikes, which will decrease the pressure on everyone, bringing it back to the UK and stop the UK getting into such a mess.
Yeah, I mean, it's a stark reminder, isn't it, that these supply chain bottlenecks have not gone away causing all sorts of ripples. Talking of ripples, I mean, how do we wrap this up? I mean, as an investor, what are you looking at? You're looking at extremes, volatility. You're looking at rising yields, rising real yields, and you're looking at sticky inflation. I mean, apart from sobbing into my coffee cup, Ben, what's the takeaway from all of this?
So normally you wait for two things in a downturn like this. One is valuations. When things can get too cheap and everyone is bearish, maybe this podcast is telling you that everyone is so super bearish and super miserable. So that's maybe a time to buy, but I don't think it's quite yet. And then the second thing you wait for normally is for the Federal Reserve to have your back, to start cutting interest rates. The problem this time around, compared to basically the last 20 years, is the Federal Reserve has their hands tied by inflation. So we're probably going to have to wait a little bit longer than normal. Is the Federal Reserve going to be able to cut interest rates or stop hiking in the next 3 months? Almost certainly not. 6 months, maybe. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking a few months. Unless we get a big washout of markets, which allows some tremendous opportunities, which could happen in certain markets, could happen. We're waiting still for a little bit longer, I suspect. The best thing that you can do in moments like this is get as much cash and collateral as you possibly can ready to be deployed, because, you know, if the pain continues, that's the thing that will see pressure, cash and collateral. People's leverage will get squeezed out. You need to have as much of that as possible and then be ready to deploy when the opportunities arise. That's unfortunately the best I can give you, Francis.
Yeah, it feels, doesn't it, as though cash, especially dollar cash, is very much king at the moment. But look, you two have been kings of the airwaves. Can I just segue into that? And thank you so much, Ben and Maria. I know it's a really super busy time for you both. So thank you so much for joining Elgin Talks. And thank you to all our listeners for listening. Thank you. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of legal and general investment management. Forward-looking statements are, by their nature, subject to significant risks and uncertainties, and are based on internal forecasts and assumptions and should not be relied upon. Where individual stocks are mentioned, these do not constitute a recommendation to buy or sell any security and are for illustrative purposes only. Legal & General Investment Management Limited, is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website. Copyright 2022. Legal & General Investment Management Limited. All rights reserved. No part of this publication may be reproduced or transmitted in any form or by any means, including photocopying and recording, without the written permission of the publishers. This material is issued by Legal & General Investment Management Asia Limited, the licensed corporation BBB 488, regulated by the Hong Kong Securities and Futures Commission, for professional investors only.